Good morning, Metroplex. It is the hump day hump edition day. Of Sean RJ and Bobby Belt.
Couch is comfortable.
Did you sleep here?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
I was told I wasn't allowed to, so.
By?
Gavin.
Oh, Spittle.
Yep.
So what what were the differences that you tried, if any, in order to wake up on time and get here today?
I set the alarm for, normally the alarm's 5, I set the alarm for like 4:20, and then 4:30, and then 4:40, and then 4:50, and then 5, and then 5:02, 5:04, 5:06, 5:08. What?
Ideally, if you could get up within the 5 minutes of the first alarm, what time would you set it?
5.
Okay. So just set 5:02, 3:45, 8:10. Instead of 4:20.
Because I don't trust that I'll then look at it and then go, 5, okay, cool. All right, let me shut off these others so they don't go blaring while I'm getting up, getting ready around the house, and then not fall back asleep.
Okay.
And so instead I set them 10 minutes apart earlier, and then they get tighter as we get closer to it's time to wake up.
So when I get up, I just get up and grab my phone and leave the room so the alarm doesn't go off, and I go make my coffee. Like, I just go right outside, make the coffee. Like, why would you be worried if it goes off?
Because it's in an apartment, it's not a spacious, choppy estate. So if it goes off, even in the next room, it's going to wake people up.
What else was happening last night in the world of Bobby Belt? He went down a little Keller High School project. I saw that.
That's not a project. That's a tweet. All my tweets can't be projects. It's not like I can't tweet after 6.
And then, obviously, he was watching the debate, and then you turn into a little pouty smartass by responding to everyone, making sure you set the alarm clock with, yeah. Yo, Bobby, don't forget. Yeah. Hey, yeah. Bobby, wake your ass up tomorrow. Yeah. Skip, don't forget to wake up. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was replying. I was letting them know. I was saying in the affirmative. I was trying to make sure that it would be passive aggressive to not reply to it.
So anything else besides just the multiple alarms? Was the phone right next to you by your bed?
No, it was on the nightstand.
Is that by your bed?
No, it's like in front of us. It's where the TV sits on.
Okay, so you got up.
Get up.
All right, nice.
And then I went up to the couch and almost laid down again, but I didn't. I was awake.
I'm just going to take it upon myself. I'm just texting him when I get up.
I was awake. I was awake when you texted.
You were. But you have a little twinge of attitude.
Right. What?
Now. Yeah. I think you don't like the ball kicking. And again, this is CeeDee Lamb. Okay. This is CeeDee Lamb energy, which I compared you to last week. Good at your job. We like you. We want you to succeed. We think that you're genuine and honest. But as you said, when CeeDee fumbled in that game, he lost the opportunity to give any type of attitude to anyone else.
You gotta be quiet.
You gotta be quiet. And you just give it off a little attitude with the ball kicking that you've been taking over 24 hours.
My attitude is never thinly veiled. I always have very clear and presented attitude. I don't think I have any attitude right now.
What happened in the meeting with the boss? How long did that last?
About 10 minutes.
Okay.
Something like that.
You walked in and just said, I'll quit if you want me to?
Pretty much.
All right.
Yeah.
How did that go?
He did not accept your resignation.
No, he didn't.
It was fast. It was hard.
It was fast. It was fast. No, just said, you know, maybe get a battery powered alarm. So even if the power gets knocked out, it wouldn't knock out the clock.
Did you feel like you gave Spittle any power that he was seeking or will maybe hold on to and hang over your head?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think of it in that term. Like, I think of it more as like, the power was, if there was any power that he could use, it was by not getting here on time. It wasn't going in there and saying anything. It was more just by what I did.
All right, so 1-for-1. We'll see how long we can keep this streak going. Who watched the debate? I assume we all did. We were texting about it here and there. Bobby was tweeting about it. I saw you send out a tweet as well. You seem much more entertained this morning than you did last night when it was actually going on.
I'm entertained by the memes, you know, the memes that hit. The debate, you know, they talk too much about the issues.
So you're an ugly American. That's what you are.
Yeah, listen, I'll tell you this.
You just want chaos and the rampage.
Yeah, when
they were so civilized.
They were so civil.
They were cordial. They were even nice, showed some mutual respect for each other.
Yeah,
they're eating the dogs.
I'm sure Bob Dole was a wonderful debater.
No, you got to get a school shooter clip for Tig.
Yeah, I'm sure Bob Dole was wonderful at debates.
He wasn't.
I'm sure John McCain. I'm sure, John Kerry. I'm sure they were great. But I need some insults now. We've lost that. That's gone. Those days are dead and gone, right? Those days.
The insults?
No, the days of like the civil debating.
Oh.
That's dead and gone. We're in a new era. And the moment that Trump and Hillary, really it was Trump with the Republicans in 2016 or 15. Once that happened and these insults were flying and the nicknames, I'm going to need something more out of these cats. So I actually forgot they started because I didn't pick it up until about 8:25. I was watching baseball. I was like, oh, crap. Debates are on.
Yeah.
And I flip over and it was like, you know, it was fine.
Yeah.
It was just issues. And that's and Sarah's like, why are we watching this? Nobody cares about the vice presidents. I was like, that's a really good point. But, you know, I still stuck.
It's not a really good point. Like,
I don't care about the vice presidents.
Well, you switched over and you said, oh, my God, I'm missing it. So you cared to some degree.
She's right. Like, it's like I don't care about the vice presidents. It is.
Well, J.D. Vance.
I was just bored with the Michael King dominance.
J.D. Vance has been like a crazy polarizing figure. Everyone wanted to see how Waltz was going to hold up in an intellectual debate. So I was really looking forward to it. But yes, it was much more civilized, maybe boring, if you want to call it that, than we're used to.
There have been three vice president debates people have cared about in recent history. It's this one. It was Palin and Biden, and it was 88. Dan Quayle and Lloyd Benson. The reason why is because it's when people care about the vice president debate when they feel like, I don't even know who that person is. When they don't know who the person is, then they want to sit there and hear it. So if they're like, Dan Quayle, are you going to say anything that, like we have no idea who you are, talk to us. Palin, we have no idea who you are, talk to us. Tim Walz, we have no idea who you are, you haven't done media, talk to us.
Yeah.
Like, those are the ones where then people are locked in, and that's a massive mistake. I would feel like at this point, everybody would be like, get your vice president candidate in front of media. Because when they have to step in that debate, and that is their very first time kind of exposed to everybody, then you get criticized for every single last thing that comes up in it.
What did you take from it, if anything? You watch more of this than the presidential debates.
Yeah, probably.
Why?
I don't know. Just the way it worked out. I think the presidential debate, there's like a game on that night or something.
There was a game last night.
Not like a relevant game, though. Not football.
There was no NFL game. It was a Tuesday.
I don't remember what it was. There was somebody on.
He's probably doing a YouTube.
I mean, it was very... Yeah, that's exactly it. It was very civil and, kind of boring, but... Like,
civil. Pay like that.
But I think that's the thing. I think they wanted Vance to be boring. Is what I would guess.
And likable.
Yeah, and they want to just say, like, show you can just go up there and execute. And show that you can go up there and answer these questions. And
he's smooth.
Yeah.
He's sharp and he's smooth.
He's smart, yeah. It's like you see, like, he's prepared to be this politician. Like, you can always tell those people who've, like, they've prepared their whole life to, like, have this job. Yeah. Like, he's done that, you can tell.
He looks like Randy Galloway's old producer, Sean Dodge. I can't get that out of my head.
As long as you guys aren't saying he looks like me anymore.
He does.
No, he does.
Someone DM'd me. They're like, hey, you look like Vance a little bit. I was like, that's the wrong co-host.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. So, Pepe, did you watch any of it or were you in on baseball?
I was baseball. I mean, I thought about tuning in, but I just, all Twitter took over for me. I was just able to go to our group text or Twitter to keep up with the debate.
I wonder how much lower these ratings will be than Kamala and Trump. Like, will it be a plummet? Will they be really, really high compared to other VP debates? I just wish they didn't start at 8 o'clock. Like, go ahead, start this at 7, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. But that's what happened last night. Very, very calm. Some would say refreshingly calm. RJ would say boring calm.
Yeah, maybe boring calm. I was expecting a little more.
They did talk way more policy than Harris and Trump. They're like, you know what? I can agree with you on this. I don't totally disagree with you on this. There was eye contact. CBS missed the opening handshake. They screwed up that shot. So it was very civil. I was like, maybe these two should just run together. Maybe
there was a lot of that.
Maybe just get these two together.
Like, can we make these two the candidates?
I'll take Vance's brains, Waltz's likability, and just throw them together.
Yeah, and Waltz's like travel experience and stuff like that. Like I would, like he's very well cultured and.
So did he lie about Hong Kong?
I don't what? Even
he
know.
Just, he messed up the timeline, apparently, when he was there. And he claimed he was there, like, during... it was like he was there... Square. Yeah, he was there during... And he was not. He was there okay. after.
So did he say that to try to appear something more, like it was more important or impactful?
Yeah, yeah. And so that was...
Like, was it an honest mistake, or was it intentional, like, well, I was there for that.
Is it Brian Williams or is it just forgetting like, oh, I was there in August instead of July or like that
right.
kind of
you
thing?
You would know, right? Like you would know if you were in Tiananmen Square during when the guy got run over by a tank.
I mean, I would assume so, but I mean, I guess as soon as they were like, so when were you in Tiananmen Square? That is like, look, I grew up on a small farming town where we played out till the lights were shut on or whatever. It's like, okay, that has nothing to do with it.
The moderators did a great job. They just stayed quiet. And they're like, keep answering it. And it got more awkward and awkward and awkward as he was trying to do so. Then they shook hands afterwards. The wives all exchanged. Everyone shook with the moderator. So
no diddy.
What's that?
You said the wives exchanged. I said no diddy.
Baseball taking place yesterday for the baseball playoffs.
Brisky sets the 2-2. Line drive. Caught by Spencer Torkelson at first. Oh, man. A little higher. It's into the corner, but Spencer Torkelson grabs it, pumps his fist, and the Tigers take game one in Houston. Woo-wee.
Tigers radio with the call as A.J. Hinch looking for his Astros revenge. He promised pitching chaos. And we got it, at least taken to the Astros lineup. Scooble is the man. 3-1. Detroit takes game one, by the way. All these are best of three.
Best of three. They tried to blow it. They tried to give it away. My
yes,
gosh.
Yes.
And that pitcher, Brisky, bro, you have 100 miles an hour in your pocket, and you're farting around with changeups. Like, just throw some high heat. You're trying to speed up the bat of a guy who is a walking strikeout in Hayward, and it almost cost him. If that ball is a foot to the other side.
It was a shot.
That is a triple or a double, clears the bases, and the Astros win. They got lucky to hang on in that one. The home teams in the American League combined for one run.
Yeah. Justin Verlander kept off the Astros playoff roster.
Yep.
How about that?
How about that?
And one run scored at home. Because of the former Ranger, Cole Reagans, on the road in Baltimore with a little more Texas in this game, too.
Swing and a ground ball, base hit left field. Bobby Witt Jr. drives in Michael Garcia. And how many times did we say that in the first half? And the Royals lead 1-0 in the sixth.
Of course, the one Royals highlight.
Where's the announcer? I thought you said Peyton. We were going to get the announcer.
Where's the announcer?
Is this not Royals radio with the call?
Okay, so you know how like Eric Nadell and Matt Hicks do the game? There's two guys.
Oh, well, so then the other guy was on a break.
The other guy was on a break.
Didn't he get the final call? Because he would have done the ninth inning.
It was a boring call, too.
That's the point.
Oh. Anyway, it was fine. Bobby Witt, it's good to get that highlight. Yeah.
Bobby Witt with the drives in the one run, and the Royals now up one game to zip on Baltimore, who has had a great season each of the last 2 years, 100 wins and 91 wins, and they're 0-4.
Yep.
In the wild card round, the Astros had won something like 11 straight series openers, and they made playoff openers. So the first game of the playoffs, and they had won now seven. They made it to
Wouldn't
seven
that be
straight
a series opener.
Playoff openers. Like, not necessarily just the series, because the Rangers won game one last year.
Okay.
So, I think, like, the actual playoff. But now they had made seven straight league championship series. They're one loss away from not even making the division series this year.
How do we get the Rangers to, like, identify and draft and develop people like Cole Reagans, though? Like, how do you get pitchers like that? Because that's the kind of guy that I want on my team, the way he pitches.
Mets double up the Brewers 8-4 in Milwaukee, and the Padres shut out the Braves 4-0 in San Diego. So that is the start of the baseball playoffs. Sean, RJ, Bobby, we got Pepe, and we're live on the FanCam, Twitch, and YouTube. We timed out the segment yesterday perfectly because it's now official. Devontae Adams is available. We have the price. We need your interest for the Cowboys and other possible names out there inside the Stars next. Are you willing to pay the price for Devontae? We have the cost. Good morning, 6 a.m. Club Hump Day Edition. Sean, RJ, and Bobby here on 105.3 The Fan. Before we get to the Devontae discussion, tell us about the Cowboys' new pass rusher. They sign KJ Henry?
Yes, KJ Henry off of the Cincinnati practice squad. He was a fifth round pick, I believe, last year out of Clemson by Washington. Spent all of training camp with them, was part of their final cutdowns, which is, I imagine, just an instance of Dan Quinn wanting his guys in there, or his type of guys, and that KJ Henry didn't quite fit that. Makes sense that he ends up here. That's a guy that Jeff Scania was the defensive line coach for Washington last year, so is familiar with him, has coached him before, dealt with him. But high motor guy, good athlete, still raw, still trying to figure out certain things with technique. Isn't always the best run defender, but a guy who most people felt like when he was drafted, like he's got the ceiling to be a starter. Like not necessarily a world beater, but you thought when he was coming out, a lot of people thought, sure, could he be Dorrance Armstrong one day? Yes, he can be that guy. So not there yet, but like an investment. Somebody who I think could be here past this year.
All right. Yesterday we had the discussion about Amari Cooper. You were bringing up Chuba Hubbard from the Carolina Panthers. Chuba. And we started with Devontae Adams. Well, yesterday it all played out. Devontae Adams informed the Raiders that he prefers to be traded. And according to Adam Schefter, the Raiders have told other teams they would consider it for a package including a second-round pick and additional compensation. Yesterday, we started off with a third for Devontae, and then when we got into the Amari discussion, we're like, it doesn't feel like a third should be the same for both of them. So I think we ended up with a second-rounder for Devontae. I'm going to say that so we see more right. So a second and some additional compensation, according to Adam Schefter, for anyone who wants to pick up Devontae Adams.
Not for two. I don't know. Just not. He's going to be a number two. He's aging. Lombardi said he has declined.
Lombardi said his tape shows that he's not the same guy.
And you always trust what Lombardi says, Chop.
Look, I don't watch film on guys. So if somebody watches film on him, and you know, he says he's got a decent eye for this, I think he's just, you know, a gatekeeper and old school.
Look, I have not. You know, I'm not watching Raider games. I can't bring myself to do it. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say Devontae Adams is a one in certain spots. If he goes to Washington, he's a one. Obviously, he's not a one here over CeeDee Lamb. But I think Devontae can still be a one. He's not a definite two in my mind. Tape could prove me wrong. Brian Broaddus, if you're out for a walk, go back for an hour and watch the Devontae highlights. But in certain places, he would still be a one, like Washington or some of the other teams that we're about to talk about.
Yeah, I think he's still capable of being that guy. Like I said, I think he's still a top 10 to 15 receiver in the NFL. He's just not. There was so long where it's like Devontae Adams is one, and then it's everybody else. Like he had that 3 years ago where people felt that way. He's just not that guy anymore.
Like is he a one in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I think he's better than Pickett still. Kenny Pickett. I'm mixing up names here, but
he's a one in Buffalo. He's a one in Kansas City. Is he a one in San Fran?
He's a three.
yeah.
So disrespectful.
Debo's a little weird. Like he's better than Ayuk to me. Debo's a tough question because of how inconsistent it's been with him. I'll say yes. Like, the guys I think of right off the top of my head that are better than him are the guys that we would, like, it'd be easy. It's okay, Chase, Jefferson, Lamb. But, I mean, like, I don't think it takes too long before you get down there and say, all right, now we're talking about Adams is in this range. I still think he's really good. He has stepped below that tier of Lamb and Chase and those guys.
Yeah, I'm sure he's still really good. Do you want to get a guy that's going to cost you $35 million next year, who's already on a downslide. We're all admitting he's on a downer slide, more downslide than he was. And
an attitude.
You have to. He will have to restructure his deal.
Uh-huh, he will.
Whatever deal,
which means extension, which means kicking more money down the road.
No. Because, I mean, so he's got $35 million left. It's non-guaranteed. Anybody who trades him is not going to cut him.
Right.
But, I mean, they don't have to pay it. They could cut him in theory, but you're not going to trade for it and then the headache. So there's an interest for Davante Adams to then say, all right, let's work on a deal. Like, when you trade for him, it's just you have to put that work in before the trade is done, which is a lot of work.
So you're out.
I'm out because you just paid the quarterback $60 million. You're going to tell me that a $60 million quarterback needs $70 million in wide receivers to make this a good offense?
Yeah, to make it a great one.
Then you don't have a $60 million quarterback.
Well, we are, but like I keep telling you, we are where we are. We don't have a time machine. What are we supposed to do with it? Not sign anyone, not try to add? What do you want to do?
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, they put themselves in this position by signing them.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean you got to make more mistakes to compound it.
Okay. Where are you stand?
Not for this team. If I'm another team, yes. Like for Dallas, no. For somebody else.
Why?
Because Dallas isn't a contender. And Adams doesn't change that. Adams changes that for potentially Washington. Adams, like, in terms of solidifies, you can go from being a good team to like you're actually contending and competing. Buffalo, if you're looking for a push over the top, he can do that in Buffalo. Dallas, that's not going to make up for what are a lot of really bad issues with this Cowboys team right now.
I don't know about that. I think if they do get them, I mean, it does improve where they are.
It improves where they are, but they are right now not a playoff team. It doesn't make you good enough to then say you're a Super Bowl contender.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you don't think that you don't have them in a NFC wild card, second place in the NFC East, even NFC East he's, winner. You're giving it to Washington?
I assume Dallas is finishing below 500 this year. In fact, before the year, I think I picked them 8-9. I think I've adjusted to like 7-10.
Now, not to start a second fight here.
Start it.
But doesn't that tell you something about Dak? Let me finish the question. If they get Devontae and they don't put up 28 or 30 a game, I mean, that you have by far the best wide receiver combo in the league, I think. If you could become a super offense, why would you not do that? And would you not become a super offense? And if you're not, doesn't that say something about Dak?
Well, first, I think they would be a lot better offensively if he's here. But you remember your favorite time, Team 40 Burger, and when they were putting up 39 points and then losing games, or putting up 38 and losing. Okay. And this defense is not good right now. And I do think that there's still something to be said about they clearly are concerned about their ability to protect with the passing game. The way they're calling the offense right now says they don't think they can block it up long enough because of the way that they're doing it. Broadus asked this yesterday on G-Bag, and then he asked it to me during Love the Starts, his question that he's sitting around right now. He said, if you had a question, if you were given one question that you could ask Mike McCarthy, and you were told truth serum, he is going to give you a 100% honest, in-depth answer to this, what would your question be? And my question to him would be, are you and your two-star players, CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott, are you guys absolutely in line with what the offense is supposed to look like? Because if he was given truth serum and if Dak was given truth serum, the answer would be no.
So you're saying that this is last year again?
I'm saying there's consternation there. Like there's not a clear vision.
Was calling the offense, though.
There's not a clear vision for what this is supposed to be right now, I don't think. Okay. I think that they are, and because of that, like, they can have another receiver here. Well, okay, if you have disagreements about what protection is and...
So what do you think the differences are amongst them?
I think that Mike doesn't trust young offensive linemen to be able to do what they need to do in the passing game.
Yeah.
And I think
Dak
and others probably have a feeling more of like,
just trust
these guys are here. Let's trust that these guys are going to make plays for us.
Okay.
Let's see.
By the way, real quick, we should ask McCarthy Friday at 6:30 if they're calling the offense differently because of their young offensive linemen.
Yeah.
I think that's a very fair and good question.
A little dramatic, but yeah.
Is that what Mike would say?
That's what Mike says to every fair question. It's dramatic.
Franklin, injury attorneys, fan text, 877-881-1053.
I'm not Nick Harris.
Can't win as a one-dimensional team. The overreaction on Washington is sickening. They're not better than the Cowboys. Can't we all agree that it's the Dallas defense that makes them bad, a team?
Yeah.
A bad team, not necessarily the offense. They don't need them. Trade for Adams, make him wide receiver one, move Lamb to the backfield. Boom, two birds, one trade. Let's see. Devontae's not going to change anything. The Cowboys trade for you. Cowboys still can't stop the run. The quarterback stinks. The Cowboys stink in general.
So the Tolos are against it. Devontae Adams, second round pick, and maybe a little bit more. Devontae went on Kay Adams' podcast yesterday, and she asked him, has Antonio Pierce reached out, your head coach, after liking an Instagram post saying that that was your last snap in Vegas?
Yeah, I haven't heard from him. I haven't talked to him. So I don't know. I don't really know exactly what that was about. Obviously, I got, you know, social media is a beast. So it's a lot of people out there that saw it and, wondering what's going on and people reaching out. And yeah, I haven't spoke to him. But, you know, it's kind of just like the weekly what's up with Tay thing. You know, it's always some sort of drama. But at the end of the day, 1-7 doesn't create any of it. So people can say what they want, but I'm just chilling, trying to be the model for, you know, not stirring the pot and just locking in and doing what I got to do.
He should be Pete Rose banned from football for referring to himself as 1-7.
1-7 doesn't start it. Dude, you're malcontent powder. You are a pouter there on the sidelines, and you put yourself in this position. I told you, don't leave Green Bay. Don't leave the quarterback.
1-7 doesn't create any of it.
But you misjudge the Raiders, and you misjudge Derek Carr. So there you go. Now you can sit in it. But yeah, he's got an attitude problem I'd be afraid of. And Antonio Pierce not reaching out yet.
Do you buy the conspiracy theory that Antonio Pierce, I heard them talking about with Maggie and Perloff, but I've heard it elsewhere, the conspiracy theory that Antonio Pierce liked that Instagram post on purpose? Like, yeah, let's get this ball rolling so that he will be upset.
Oh, I could buy it.
He's a little bit of a, like, mental warfare guy, Pierce. I could see him doing that on purpose.
Absolutely.
All right, I've been saving up this audio. I was dying for the documentary to come out. It's out. I watched all of it. I think I binged it even before Kevin Hagelin. I'm going to take you through the audio of Vince, Mr. McMahon, next on Sean and RJ. We got State Fair tickets to hook you up with. We got a Steelers Insider at 7:20, Power Rankings at 8, and it's a Meet Church Wednesday as well. Take you inside this Mr. McMahon documentary after this. Some baseball Diamond Cavs with RJ Choppy coming up at 7 o'clock with the playoffs kicking off yesterday. We got a State Fair ticket giveaway during the 7:20 Expressway along with the Steelers Insider. We will chop it up at 7:40, then Power Rankings at 8, and it is a Meet Church Wednesday with Matt Pittman at 8:20. Loaded Hump Day Edition.
Okay. Glad you're
joining us here on Sean, RJ, and Bobby on 105.3 The Fan. So I had saved up this audio, the Vince McMahon, Mr. McMahon documentary on Netflix, 6-part series. I did not watch, by the way, Aaron Hernandez last night because of the VP debate. I'll have to go home and watch that today.
I didn't see it either. I was, the debate. Then I finished the baseball game last night. Michael King was unbelievable for San Diego. Unreal. 12 strikeouts. First, like, playoffs start. Fantastic.
Yeah, I didn't watch Aaron Hernandez either. I was watching another murder on Channel 11 or whatever it was.
Oh, but you don't have the balls to say anything at 6 o'clock. Tell us what you really think. You thought it was a beatdown?
I was just trying to come up with some sort of analogy. I'm just kidding.
Bobby Vance over here. So the McMahon documentary, first off, it was very nostalgic. I don't watch wrestling anymore. I haven't for a long time, but I did with my pops. Here you have this cardiologist in town who's sending his little kids into the video store to go get the Royal Rumble that just came out. He's like, just go in there, look in the wrestling section. You know, he didn't want to be seen going in there, getting WrestleMania and Survivor Series. So I'd go in there with my brother. We'd watch it. And Bret the Hitman Hart and Ultimate Warrior, that's when I watched it and knew all those names. So that was pretty cool in terms of the nostalgia. And no matter what you think about wrestling, I mean, the behind the scenes is, I mean, it's right down my alley with the... Have you been watching Vanderpump more?
I've got two episodes so far.
Oh, man. But the salaciousness and the sex and the drugs and the deaths and all the stuff behind the scenes that you can get into, whether you like wrestling or not. So they start off in the ring, and it's McMahon sitting down, and he gets like this phone call, or someone comes up to him, and it is interrupted with like the latest sexual allegation stuff. So he gets up, walks out of the ring to like deal with that, and turns out he never came back. Like, he did not finish his series of interviews because this stuff was dropping about the sex trafficking. So it starts off like that. And then he's like, you know, I'm not going to tell you like the real stories. I'll give you enough to keep you entertained. But I wish I could tell you the real stories. And they're like what? Like, what's on your mind right now? And he gives a real creepy line like, there's some sexual stuff on my mind right now.
That's a good line.
I didn't grab that clip. It wasn't a line. It was the truth. He's like, this and this and that, and some sex. Some sex, too.
We need that as a drop.
And you're like, damn,
I got some sexual stuff up my mouth.
This guy is depraved. There's no doubt about it. And he mentions it multiple times. He's like, I have a real active sex life. Like, and I'm like, dang, Linda McMahon, she must be a freak. But, of course, they saw her for the childhood, and he was abused. And did not meet his dad until 12. His dad was a wrestling promoter.
Yeah.
Ran all the territories, as they called them.
Yeah, they had, you go back and you watch the Monday Night Wars, which was like a long series documentary that was put out probably about 15 years ago. But, I mean, it details each region from the Northeast where the WWE was. Then you had like, you had your regions in the South and the Midwest and Texas and then up in like, Canada, like the Northwest Territories had their own region. Like they were completely, it was old school, something you would learn in world history.
Yeah.
Of like 3000 BC with little pockets.
And you didn't infringe. You did not invade. You did not step on other people's territories. Yep. Well, Vince is like, screw that. I'm going in and I'm buying all your best talent. I'm raiding you. And I'm taking them and bringing them over to WWF.
Oh, right. At the time, Vince had...
Yeah.
Vince had the best thing going, which was like New York City. So from like a media standpoint, there was more money for him to be able to, you know, to do that.
So he ends
up New York area.
He ends up buying the company. His dad sells him the company and he's like, you're going to work for me now. And, you know, if you don't do things the way I want, I'm going to fire you. I don't care that you're my dad or not. What's also amazing is all these wrestlers, who they actually were before they became big names as wrestlers. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Stone Cold, who
Stunning
he looked
Steve
like.
Steve Austin.
Yeah.
You had
Hogan.
Hogan was what you had. But Triple H was,
The Rock.
The Rock was.
He was like this Samoan character. Mm-hmm.
Always smiling. Super hat. Totally different. Like, yes. He wanted him to be like this happy-go-lucky kind of guy.
Yes. So he's going and picking out the guys that he thinks can be stars. And then he gets them on MTV. And WrestleMania 1 is a closed circuit event. And then Saturday Night Main Event. That's kind of all the things that brought it to popularity. And I remember Saturday Night Main Event. That was fantastic. That was like, okay, this is like something real. And eventually they got, I think, on NBC. And the popularity starts blowing up. And then the steroid scandals hit. And they're working 7 days a week, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
7 days a week. All year long, no breaks. It's apparently like much, much better now for some family time. But because of that, these guys are needing to take painkillers. And it starts blowing up. You know who blew up their spot was Phil Mushnick.
Oh, the New York Post media reporter?
Yes. Phil Mushnick is all over them like a damn tick, like an irritant, saying, why is no one talking about this?
Yeah.
Why is no one sitting here? These guys are dying. They're using steroids. They're cheating, and Hulk Hogan gets caught lying about taking them himself.
That's not what happened.
I'm not a steroid abuser, and I do not use steroids.
They're like, oh God, please, you know, just tell the truth. It's so much easier.
Hulk Hogan went on the Arsenio Hall show, and he told everybody that he only took steroids 3 times.
He lied like a dog.
I myself injected him personally.
I injected Hogan with steroids many times.
Yeah. So Vince is like, we got caught lying there. And Hogan's like, yeah, I got caught lying. So they had this unappointed. They did not get to choose, like, their doctor, apparently, but they had this unappointed doctor treating the wrestlers, and he was selling them steroids. And Vince, like, admitted himself that he was using steroids. Like, Vince would surprise you with some of his admissions. Oh. He's like, yeah, I took them, like, myself.
Vince got massive.
Yeah.
Just massive.
Yes. So they're taking painkillers and steroids, and you have the Chris Benoit incident. And Chris Benoit, who kills his family, including his children, they're like, was this a roid rage that took place? And then you got Jimmy Snuka.
Superfly Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah, there was a girlfriend. His girlfriend died. And so they're like, what's going on with the steroids and what's happening with it? Jesse Ventura tries to unionize them. All right. This is right before a major event. Mm-hmm. Jesse the Body Ventura is like, we need to unionize. We're getting screwed here. And Hulk Hogan ends up being like the rat to go back and tell Vince everything. Hulk Hogan and Vince, they were boys, right? Vince is like, I'm going to make you the face. Hogan's like, this is the guy who helped make me. So anytime someone's talking about something behind the scenes, Hogan just runs right into Vince's office. He's like, Phil Mushnick is not here to report on us. He's here to out us. Jesse Ventura, he's trying to form a union, and he runs in and tells Vince, and everyone knows that Hogan is a little snitch.
Have you ever worked with any Hogans?
Yes. Yes. And he like wrestling. 877-881-1053 in order to hit us up here on the show. And then they're just talking about like the content, and Phil Mushnick's like, your kids should not be watching this. And here's Vince McMahon talking about
simmer down, Phil.
The content that wrestling was supposed to be.
A standard deviation beyond what we were doing before. But it was still family friendly. No one got killed. There was no rape.
Come on out, you rapist!
No use of knives or guns or anything like that.
Witness a recent simulated castration scene.
So it's still family friendly. Maybe for more of an adult family, not for young kids.
Yeah. So all those things got countered. They were doing, dude, they were crazy. Crazy stunts that they were pulling.
The Attitude Era of like the late 90s just completely changed everything. It was so awesome. And most of us, if you were a wrestling fan at that time, had moved over to WCW at that point because they were just so much better. They had all the stars. I mean, they had older stars.
Yep.
And WCW had these guys like Benoit and Jericho they just couldn't figure out how to use, and they all go to WWE. And then now they're promoting The Rock and Triple H and Stone Cold and the Generation X.
But the Attitude Era
completely changed everything.
But the Attitude Era copied WCW. When Nash and Razor,
NWO,
NWO went over there and they were like bad boys and doing all this and that. They're like, all right, we're just going to go ahead and copy that. And you talk about the 90s, it's amazing how to watch Sergeant Slaughter and the Iron Sheik and those characters. So they're playing up the real world issues with Iraq and Iran, right?
And this stuff
is happening in the 90s on TV, and they're like, Sergeant Slaughter's going out there, and they're burning American flags and waving, the flags of different countries. Yeah. Hezbollah, they're waving the Hezbollah flag.
They are.
They're inciting the crowd and all these people, and then eventually they have to, like, you know, they're like, all right, we got to back off, but we're still going to go through with the event.
But they went through all the events, and they did back off a little bit on certain things, but certain things they just kind of leaned into. And that was part of the genius of it.
And some of the storylines, man. Stephanie McMahon, who of course married Triple H, she was like, "How many times have you said no to your dad for a storyline?" And this is the one that probably trended the most on social media with an idea that Vince had that Stephanie said, that's too far.
My dad did approach me about wanting to be the father of my baby in a storyline for TV, which again is only the second time I've ever actually said no to him for something he wanted to do. And that one was just a little too gross, actually. It's completely disgusting, and I don't find the entertainment value in it at all. And he's actually my father. So how could I even play that out? I can't fake kiss my dad like we were in love or something. I mean, it's just revolting all the way around. So then he came up with the idea for Shane to actually be the father of my baby, my brother. And I, again, just know that I know that sometimes that happens in this world, but it's not going to happen with us. I just can't do that. That's too much.
It's so creepy.
He was ahead of the curve,
that's
though.
So dude, creepy. He is doing scenes where he's making out with all the female wrestlers in front of his wife, who's in a coma in a wheelchair. Every scene, she's in a wheelchair, and they're giving her the medicine to sedate her, and he's making out with the women right in front of her. And the wife is saying, you got to sell it. You got to sell it, Trish Stratus. Get in there with the kiss. You really got to get in there with it. And Vince is grabbing their asses, and it's softcore porn in front of his wife right there.
It's a world that doesn't exist to normal people. It's just, it's a crazy, crazy world. Like, all that stuff from the stuff that happened with his wife to, because she was a politician. She later became a politician.
Well, she's really into supporting, like, campaign.
Linda McMahon ran for Senate.
I don't know if she became one or not.
No, she lost to Blumenthal.
Yes, but she was like she wanted to be a politician. She got really into that stuff. But on the side, she was also the businesswoman that was party to all this too.
All right, so that's just part one of the Mr. McMahon Netflix documentary. Let me know if you've seen it and your favorite or most disturbing parts. Baseball playoffs kicking off. We got a Steelers preview at 7:20 along with State Fair tickets. But man, a Ranger playoff hero gets destroyed by his boss. They have destroyed the helmets for the postseason. RJ Choppy with a Diamond Cavs playoff edition on the home of the Rangers next.